Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well.
Wow.
As I was just saying, Bruce, that's 3 hours that none of us are going to ever get back. I mean, I bet you a lot of fans that even watched that game, a 5-2 snooze fest loss of the Edmonton Oilers to the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, it was a meaningless game. It was always going to be a meaningless game, but it lived up to the billing. How are you?
Meaningless game with very few highlights and a whole lot of disengaged players tonight. I mean, the big boys didn't do much, but the second and third guys, I mean, if Adam Henrique or Corey Perry, for instance, did anything in that game, it just slipped my attention altogether. It's just,
I'm thinking they're such veteran players.
Let's go out there and survive and live to fight another day. There's one thing worse than cheering for the losing team in that 5-2 game, Dave, and that's cheering for the winning team, right? Because that's their last game of the season. No playoffs for them and no team next year. Like, that's brutal.
Yeah.
For Edmonton, it's just a momentary, well, that's 3 hours of our life we won't get back. Let's move on to the playoffs and hopefully not develop too many terrible habits between tonight and tomorrow.
I'm not worried about that. I think Henrique and Perry and the veterans is like, why bother? Like, they're too smart to hustle and hit, right? Like, you just do not, in a game like that, you just survive it. You try not to get hurt. Don't take a puck off the skate, you know, don't do anything. Although Henrique did block a shot, I noticed. Mistakenly got in the way of one shot there. So, yeah. Bruce, this is our two good things, two bad things, two numbers, and one conundrum podcast. What is your good thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the first Oilers goal, the tying goal, the one tying goal they scored that knotted the count at 1-1 late in the first period. And it was a really nice cycle, actually, by several players. But the key ones were Sam Carrick, who tipped the puck home, and Matthias Janmark, who screened. Wasn't it Janmark who did the screening on that one?
Yeah, and, nice screen.
And Matthias Ekholm, the other Matthias. Well, I guess Janmark is the other Matthias, and Ekholm is Matthias the first in the hierarchy of the Oilers. But Matthias Ekholm, in the process, I'm going to sneak a number in here, 45th point of the season, creating a new career high for this tremendous player deep into his hockey career at age 33, turning 34 next month. And at this late stage, he passed his career year, and I think surely is going to be his last game of the season tonight. And he previously hit 44 in 2018-19 with Nashville. And otherwise, he was just consistently in the 20s and 30s throughout his time there, 35, 34, 33, 31, last year 32 with two teams. You know, that was kind of his level, was 30. And he had that 144-point campaign. And I think maybe that year he got power play time because somebody was out, Yossi, I think, anyway. And then this year, not really getting any power play time. We have these truly remarkable figures of 11 goals, also a career high. Previous career high was 10. And I'm not saying this guy is consistent, David. This is his seasons he's had of goals. 11, 10, 8, 8, 8, 7, 6, 6, 5. You know, like, he's always somewhere between 5 and 10. Well, this year he got over 10. And also plus 44. A new career high in that department, which he has crushed plus minus in his whole career, not just in his time in Edmonton. So he had many, many double-digit plus seasons in Nashville. And they don't show career numbers in that stat for some reason, but it's well over plus 100 on his career, which is very good in a parity league.
We have Matthias, it's like the army of Troy. We have Matthias the Greater and Matthias the Lesser.
The ungreat.
was the Ajax. Ingrate. Ajax the Greater and the Troy. Uh-huh. Bruce, I liked Matthias the Lesser on that goal.
I did too.
I was trying to figure out who screened the goalie. It took me a while because I couldn't see the number. Because Janmark had started the play in the corner, actually, passing it back to Bouchard. So I wasn't expecting him. I didn't think it was going to be him screening. But lo and behold, it was him executing the total eclipse of the sun screen, which was crucial to that goal. There's no goal. Yeah. There's no goal if Matthias Janmark doesn't get in there and screen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I are Matthias Janmark fans. It's kind of like,
I know, I know.
It's kind of like it's not a big club. It's kind of like people who like, I don't know, like blue cheese or something. Like, it's not everybody. But yeah, we're convinced of it. The ones who do see his merit, we really see his merit. Mm-hmm. And the ones who don't, they shake their heads and think, why is he going to be playing ahead of Dylan Holloway? They cannot figure it out. But such is hockey.
Yeah, I think he's going to be playing ahead of Dylan Holloway, and I can easily predict the howls of outrage that will ensue, because Holloway is by far the more noticeable player. Janmark, you kind of got to study a little bit to pick up what he's doing out there. Just so smart and just around the puck, challenging for the puck, and not a hell of a lot happens. And coaches love that kind of player, and I guess I'm that sort of fan that I got all day for a couple guys on my team like that. And I think he's a useful guy to have around.
It's funny, Bruce. Sometimes I still get the comment, well, you must be, if I say something good about Janmark, someone will say, well, you must be seeing a different game than I am. Probably. And I say, actually, it's true, because we do video review. Uh-huh. And I don't want to sound too smug when I say it.
Right.
But I think that it's not a coincidence.
Watch the game differently, for sure.
That you and I that in the video review, we you know, going over all those grade A shots year after year after year, you do start looking at the game. Well, when you do that video review, you see things that you miss if you're just watching it. When I just watch a game and I'm not doing video review, I really don't know what's happened. Yeah, I can't tell you exactly what's happened in the game. Like, I'm kind of lost without the review right now. Maybe you get a better sense if you don't do it. I'm not saying our way is necessarily superior. But I do think, for me at least, like, I just, in terms of, like, having a valid opinion on a hockey game, if I haven't done that kind of analytical video review and work on key plays in the game, I just don't feel like I have much to say about it, honestly. So, but that's just, it's just my crutch, Bruce.
Well, doing it for, you know, all season long, and, you know, you see the guys who, you know, make plays, and you see the guys who snuff plays,
yeah,
who don't make mistakes, but who, you know, erase mistakes sometimes of others. And they don't even show up on our stats, because in the end, they're not grade A shots if they get snuffed.
That's right.
But that guy is solid in that department, and I think pretty underrated by our fan base.
He's excellent in grade A shot suppression. Mm. All right. My good thing, Bruce, is Warren Fogle. And all game long, he was the one Oiler out there, I thought, you know, other than Ekholm perhaps. And there's a few other players who were going, Holloway and McLeod were skating hard. But Fogle was really going hard and driving the net and battling. And, you know, trying to get that 20th goal of the year. And finally he got it. It was actually a play started by Philip Broberg in his own zone. And both Louis and Jack noted just how confident Broberg was when he picked up the puck in his own. He charged through the forecheckers into open ice, which is what defense, like, take the open ice, skate into open ice. And I've been waiting all year for Paul Coffey to get his hands on Philip Broberg. I think that Paul Coffey could be the tonic that Broberg needs to utilize his unbelievable skating ability. I mean, as good a skater as Kulak is, I think Broberg is as good and maybe better, may even have an extra gear compared to Kulak. Anyway, he did charge out of the zone and he hit Fogle with a pass. Broberg then charges up the ice and pulls the defenseman back with him, opening up a seam for Fogle to shoot. And Fogle unleashed a hell of a shot from the high slot and scored. And I do think, Bruce, there was a tip. I think that went off a defenseman's stick. And I could be incorrect. And I don't have super slow-mo on my TV. It doesn't come with whichever cable service I have. So, and you have it. So you didn't see it, but I thought it hit somebody.
I just thought he bombed it past Ingram from like 40 feet, but it was a great shot, but it was probably outside the grade A area that
let
fly. And I don't think it was screened. Broberg was more of a distraction than a screen.
It wasn't. But I do think it ticked up, but I could be incorrect. Anyway,
his again.
20th goal of the year, fantastic accomplishment for Warren Fogle.
Probably worth a lot of money to him, that 20th goal, you know?
It's funny how that works. Now he's a 20-goal scorer, right?
Yeah, he's got that label. Never had it before.
Yeah, so I'm just checking on what his previous goal totals were.
10, 13, 10, 12, 13. And then suddenly 20. And he's also gotten a career high with 21 assists, which he was always, again, in the teens, 17, 10, 14, 15. So career highs in both categories, and obviously with points as well, with 41. He never even hit. He got to 30 once before.
He's had a hell of a year. I know some people don't think he plays tough enough, like that he doesn't have enough of an edge to his game, but I think he plays hard. Like, I never see him back down. I mean, he's not Evander Kane, but who is?
Right.
I mean, there's just one Evander Kane, so.
He goes all where right. Angels fear to tread, Fogle.
He does. He charges. That. He's got a little bit of the Glenn Addison in him, right? Like, he's not quite as reckless and crashing the net, but he does talented. Have that. Yeah, or talented. But he does have a bit of that aspect of going hard to the net. And I really like Warren Fogle as a player. I think that he's been all told, this is coming to the end of his 3-year deal. Of course, there's still the playoffs to come, but he's given them value on that 3-year deal. He's gotten better each year he's been in Edmonton. And he's still in the prime of his career, and he's going to get a big contract with someone. I'm not sure how much that'll be, but I'm guessing $4-5 million a year, Bruce.
What did, like, four. Mason, I think four, yeah.
Yeah, four. Like, what did Mason Marchment get in Dallas? He's a bit bigger and younger than maybe Fogle was, a bit more rugged. But, like, I could see a team, like, let's say Arizona, for instance, moving to Salt Lake. Apparently, they got money to spend.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the kind of team that might, you know, think, oh, this is a guy who can be on our top six and really help us win for the next 3 or 4 years. So, alrighty, your bad thing, Bruce.
Oh, yeah. Bad thing I had. Oh yeah, Philip Broberg's luck, and he finally got back into the NHL after like 5 months. In fact, he started the game because he was playing with Troy Stetcher, and I'm pretty sure they gave Stetcher the start because he was a former Arizona player playing in the last game in that building and kind of repping Arizona on the Oilers, if you will. So they got the first shift 22 seconds, and then they went into the usual rotation, and then Broberg's first full shift, Arizona fires a puck down the ice. Broberg breaks for the corner behind the goalie because the puck's going to hit the end boards and ring around, and he's going back to get it, except the puck doesn't hit the end boards. It hits a blankety blank referee in the face-off circle, apparently sleeping, because he had a lot of time to get out of the way. You know, like, lift your skate or skate away, or, you know, this puck was shot from quite some distance away from him and not going that hard. Anyway, it hits the ref, and Broberg is peeling away from it, and it bounces straight to the Arizona guy in the slot with another Arizona guy behind him. Bam! Shoots and scores, and hey, welcome back to the NHL, Philip. -1, another -1. Man, you can't keep the puck out of your net. No wonder you can't play in this league. I mean,
well, initially I kind of blamed him. I thought, what the hell are you doing? On the, your way, like you're skating off to this other corner, but the play's over here, and I couldn't figure it out. And then eventually I agreed with you, Bruce. Neither Oilers defenseman was at fault. I mean, they just dumped the puck behind DeHarnay. Yeah. And before he knows it, someone else, not his guy, has charged in. Mm-hmm. And
well, the refs made a great play behind them, and they just weren't expecting that.
A pass out front by the ref. you know, yeah. You know, the ref just might have had his weight in the wrong direction at that moment. I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it wasn't just because of arrogance or laziness that he didn't.
No, it was just a mistake.
It's just a mistake on the ref's part. I feel bad for him because he probably feels terrible that he caused the goal. But
some people were giving Broberg grief on the air or on the Twitter.
Of course,
well, they weren't getting a lot of help from the on-air crew that didn't notice what happened either. Like when it first went in, we were like, how the hell, what happened? I said, it must have hit the ref. And then watch the replay. Sure enough, it hit the ref. And we're getting description of puck took a funny bounce, but we really don't know. Well, it hit the ref. And so they were just the unfortunate victims on that play. And it's just kind of how it's gone with Broberg. I mean, there was one earlier this year. Remember, it was a 2-on-2, and he was skating backwards, and he stepped on the blade of a stick that was laying on the ice.
Oh, jeez.
Down he goes, 2-on-1, goal, right? Yeah.
I saw him good this game, Bruce. He had a good stick all game long, broke up a lot of plays.
He does have a good stick. He can really reach and get it in there, and he's got an active stick and good reflexes and instincts of, you know, poking it in a good spot to, you know, extract the puck or at least break things up. And seen lots of that in Bakersfield. And the question is, you know, how much of the game is going to translate here? Well, in game number one, I mean, he took that kick right off the bat and maybe a little soft on one of the subsequent goals, and then
a bit too much gap. I thought
create perhaps a goal.
Yeah,
held his own.
His mistake on that goal against was marginal. Actually, I'm going to go like I thought the my bad thing is just the lack of support for Calvin Pickard. Now in Pickard's non-defense, he didn't exactly make a big save. Like he didn't inspire the team with any big saves, but the goals against were. They were all five alarm shots pretty much, except for maybe the last
one. They were snipes.
Yeah. So the first one, it's a weird one because Brett Kulak has moved up into the play in the offensive zone and Ryan McLeod's covering for them, covering for him. And the puck goes into the corner and Ryan McLeod charges into the corner when he's covering for the D-man. And I think it was actually maybe an okay decision by McLeod, but out of an abundance of caution, he probably should have not done that. But Kulak did have plenty of time to get back into the play and stop the play as it was developing. And then Evan Bouchard was also caught up ice as they sent in Matias Michelli, the Oilers' bane, on a breakaway, and he scored. So three players kind of combined on that one. The next one, again, comes out of the offensive zone, and it's a 3-on-2, and it's because Draisaitl's lost a battle in the offensive zone. McDavid's slow coming back on the back check, and this is the one where Broberg, he's maybe a bit too much gap. There's a back pass, and then they pass right through Troy Stetcher, and they're right in on net, and again. So you know, all kinds of players let the goalie down on that one. And on the fourth goal, I should say, Vinny DeHarnay executed a perfect screen of the goalie, and Connor Brown failed to cut out the cross seam pass across for Dylan.
That was a power play goal, eh?
That's a power play goal in the 5 minutes left in the third. So there was not a lot of support for Calvin Pickard from the ref or his teammates in this one. At the same time, he didn't exactly make a lot of big saves either, so. I think I gave.
Well, they only gave up 24 shots in the game.
Yeah,
maybe I should have given five of them went in.
Maybe I should have given. I'm going to give them a 4. I'm going to change my mark here. Maybe not. I have to log in again, so I'll just leave it as a 5.
Saved.
saved by
a login.
By a login. He's going to be so relieved that the Cult of Hockey did not give him a 4. Mm. All right, Bruce. Your number.
Yeah, I'm going to go right back at Brett Kulak, who you just talked about, with that play being the highlight. These are on-ice shot shares for Brett Kulak. These are the so-called fancy, not necessarily sexy, but fancy stats. And Kulak played 16 minutes at 5-on-5 in this game. In that time, Edmonton attempted 27 shots on net. Arizona attempted 4. 27-4. It just jumps right off the page of Edmonton Oilers. Only Ryan McLeod was sort of moderately close in shot shares, and he was a long way back. It was 21-2 in unblocked shot shares, 13-2 in shots on net, and in goals, 0-4, 1 against. Doesn't matter how much you push the play. If you don't push it into their net and the one mistake you make winds up in your net, you can have all, you know, you can have an 87% Corsi as Kulak did in this game, and a 0% goal share. And I'm just interested what they have them for expected goals, just for fun. As expected, 1.23 goals for and 0.09 against. 93% expected goals, 0% actual goals. So sometimes the reality and the you know, and the weave of the game, where you think, you know, you're establishing flow of play and possession and that sort of thing, but it just takes one to go in the net, and a whole lot of, you know, sort of grade B and C shot attempts at the other end that don't get much done. But this was a particularly extreme example of that. So,
yeah,
you know, jumps. He had 5 shot attempts himself, 3 on net. He had 5 hits to lead the team. Like, he had a pretty active game, but, and he played some with Bouchard, because in the second period tonight, this is worth a mention, Broberg was given a whole period on right defense playing with Ekholm. Mm-hmm. That promise they made to him before training camp, they finally gave him 20 minutes in game 81. But just to see what it looked like. And,
sure, why not?
Yeah.
I didn't see Kulak particularly well on the game. I didn't notice him.
Yeah.
He skated right. Well. There was a couple shifts where he was skating okay and that, but I didn't think he was, like, he certainly wasn't dominating the play in any significant way.
He was just standing on the point.
Oh, that's right. All right, Bruce, my number is Fogel's points per 60 at even strength, or excuse me, at 5-on-5 this year.
Mm-hmm.
In 81 games, he's at 2.22. So that ranks 59th in the NHL. He's that puts him in as a top line forward in the NHL this year by points per 60 at even strength.
That's
and he's at 2.2. Just to give you some other idea of players in that same category, Matthew Tkachuk's at 2.26, Jordan Kyrou 2.26, Alex DeBrincat 2.23, Matt Boldy 2.22, tied with Warren Fogel, Evgeny Malkin 2.19, Matthew Duchesne 2.18, Tim Stützle 2.18. So this is very
high-end offensive players, or at least, you know, pretty high-end.
Now, there's also Dakota Joshua, who's at 2.2.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. So now you could say even in a season, well, he had good puck luck. But Bruce, he was in on all kinds of grade A shots. Like, his rate of grade A shots is second only to Hyman for a winger on the team. Just a full-time winger. Like, he was in on a ton of grade A shots. Warren Fogel, to me, analytically, is an analytic superstar this season. And in the ones that counts, creating grade A shots, getting points, and I think we're gonna miss him next year. Although Dylan Holloway looks like he's ready to shine, perhaps, and can step into that spot. I mean, I'm not saying for sure Warren Fogel's leaving Edmonton. It seems pretty likely.
Just, you know, the math.
It'll be tough to sign him unless they trade out a veteran player that we're not expecting them to trade. And that doesn't mean CeCe or Kulak, because they're going to need all that money from CeCe and Kulak for other stuff, I feel. So, it's unlikely that Fogel and one of Kulak or CeCe, or both of Kulak and CeCe, will be back next year. And they're all good players. Kulak's a really good player, and Fogel is a really, really good player. And CeCe is at least an okay player. You know, he's probably a bit overpaid right now, but if he was like your third pairing defenseman, you'd be really happy with Cody Ceci He's a solid NHL player, and maybe he's going to really shine in the playoffs. I mean, the story's not told for any of these guys yet. So, and if one of them was to shine, like if Fogle was to be a huge factor in the playoffs, it would make him harder to sign, but the desire to sign him then would go up as well. So anyway, what a great season for Warren Fogle. I have a ton of admiration for the game he played.
Yeah, well, this is 2 years in a row. You know, last year he was at 2.09 points per 60, and this year 2.22. Anything over two is excellent, especially for a complimentary player. That's real good.
Yeah.
And, you know, like it's definitely, you know, most people think of the guy as a third liner, and yet he produces at least a second line rate. And like you say, if you just stack him up against league-wide, is he in the top 96? Why, yes, he is. You know, so by one definition, that makes him a first line production.
The number one points per 60 in the league this year is Connor McDavid, 3.5, followed by Nathan MacKinnon at 3.41. Mm-hmm. And considerably behind them is Nikita Kucherov at 3.07, like half a goal per 60 behind the top two guys.
Count empty net goals in there. And if you look at even strength.
Yeah, they don't count empty net there.
Anyway, he racked up a few of those.
He's the king of the yawning maw, whatever it's called. All right, Bruce.
14 points record. Most empty net points in a season. Just saying.
Most overrated player in the NHL. That's all
I wouldn't say that.
I'm just trolling.
I'm not a fan of the guy, but boy, he makes some good passes.
He's a great hockey player, obviously.
Finds lanes, spins, does some of that Leon stuff on the forehand. Leon does it on the backhand, where he does the 180, you spin around and whips a pass right on the tape.
And I don't think he'll be the MVP this year. I don't think it's going to be Matthews. I think it's going to be MacKinnon or McDavid, and if I had to bet MacKinnon, but I think McDavid still has a chance. He's got a lot of respect from people who are knowledgeable about hockey.
Yeah, he'll get a bunch of fourth and fifth place votes, maybe some thirds. I don't think McDavid has a prayer this year.
You don't, eh? You're probably right.
Yeah. The only way he wins MVP is if he's, you know, head and shoulders above now, and this year there are other guys who kept up with him, and whatever. He's got three of those baubles. You know what trophy I want to see him win? The Conn Smythe.
I've been saying that all year, man. And I completely agree. That's one he wants to win.
Yeah.
That's one he's going to win. All right, Bruce. Let's hope. Conundrum. Mm. Okay. This was going to be my bad thing. The conundrum is, why did McDavid and Draisaitl even play tonight? I don't get it, honestly. I don't get it.
They seem to be actively wondering that themselves at times.
You can see the thought bubble trailing around the ice. Why the hell am I out here tonight?
Well, this is something I've been following. As you know, I've written a couple posts in the last 2 weeks about Oilers' wicked schedule down the stretch and how they could use their remaining roster flexibility to their advantage. And finally, today, they used their last, they called up Broberg yesterday. They were allowed four free moves after the deadline, right? Everybody gets four. And there weren't any injuries, so it wasn't like they had to use them right away. They called up Holloway last week. They called up Broberg yesterday. And finally today at like 5 o'clock, they announced that they called up Sam Gagne and Adam Ernie. But they're only going to come into Colorado and play game 82 tomorrow. And I would have to think they're going to play all this extras and subs and scrubs are all going to play tomorrow. And they're probably going to sit, they can now sit out finally for the last game. They can sit out four forwards. And if I'm guessing, it's McDavid, Draisaitl, Hyman, and Nugent Hopkins or Kane, depending on if Kane is ready to go.
It's great that Kane's been getting a rest. I will say that.
Like, I agree.
We didn't know how hurt he was. Evidently, somewhat.
He's been carrying stuff for 2 years. Seems like he's always got some nick or other. And the closer he can get to 100% for the playoffs, the better. So I understand them just keeping him out. And, you know, he doesn't need to be running Lawson Crouse. He needs to be running, I was going to say Mark Stone. But, you know, those guys, whoever the opponents are in round one of the playoffs. So anyway, I the conundrum, Holland sort of did all the things that I thought he might do. Like brought up, they put in Broberg and Stetcher as a pairing tonight and sat another pairing. And I'm going to bet any money now that he's going to sit a different pairing tomorrow, and it's going to be Bouchard and Ekholm that sit in Colorado, which is smart coaching in terms of picking his right game to sit out Ekholm, because just in case there's any Colorado players with a grudge from the hit on Rantanen, all I want to hear out of Ekholm tomorrow is that he went down to the Colorado locker room and shook hands with Mikko Rantanen and had a nice chat with him and assured him that there was no ill intent in his hard hit, you know, but not be a target for anybody on the ice. So it's a good night for him. If you're going to pick one, you might as well pick that one. No point in any getting in any sidebars at this point. And that's great. I mean, I would have had them two defensemen up at least one game earlier and had them roll through all three of the other defense pairs. But as long as the top four get a game off, the goal this week was as few players as possible playing 5 and 7 right before the playoffs. And with the forwards, they waited awfully late. And, I mean, shocking that tonight they use the exact same 12 as against San Jose. But tomorrow we'll see that. And I guess it would be Gagne and Lavoie. But as soon as I saw the names, I thought, of course, Ken Holland would call up Gagne and Ernie. Because those are the two guys he signed as PTOs back in September. Came in, made the club, added depth to the roster, played half the season, and they've got, you know, they became pawns in the great, for the greater good, as the Oilers added Corey Perry and Adam Henrique. You know, somebody had to go to make room for them. Those guys took their medicine, went to the minors for a chunk of time, and I'm willing to guess promises were made. We're going to have you back up for the playoffs, and if we can, we'll have you back up before the playoffs. And here they are one day before the playoffs, getting one game. But hey, you know, for them, that's a useful game to get back up to NHL speed, with every chance that they're going to be with the what we used to call Black Aces, what do you call nowadays, taxi squad, for the foreseeable. And to me, it would have made sense to have them play maybe two or three games and not just the one. But and they did have the space to do it. So it's just everything unfolded a little bit slowly. But eventually, they used all of the moves at their disposal. And tomorrow, they're going to get maximum rest with their 26-man roster. So you're going to see 6 regulars out tomorrow night. And I wouldn't be shocked if Pickard again is in that.
Maybe they want to just have a little bit more cap space to pay off bonus money.
It doesn't work that way. It's a different calculation, and that calculation is zero. They have nothing to pay off Brown and Perry's bonuses. So, and the other move that I floated that got a little resistance in the comments, the real power move would have been to call up Jack Campbell for game 82.
Completely agree.
Start him in the net. Give Pickard the ball cap to be the backup because he played tonight. Give Skinner a night on high with a casual suit on and his choice of tie or no tie, you know, and popcorn, and watch the game from above and reflect and just take a full day off from it. And, you know, Campbell is, you know, sort of heartbeat from the presidency in the sense, you know, that if something happens to one of the goalies, he's at least going to be up here. And he, you know, there are scenarios where they're going to need a goalie to take the net. So to me, that would have been kind of the inside baseball move. And I kind of thought Holland might think about it. But in the end, he brought up two kids in Broberg and Holloway. Two vets and Gagne and Ernie, and all of them were on the team at the start of the year, and now they're all back here in time for the playoffs. And that said, I think Broberg's here for 2 days and he'll go back to Bakersfield because they need him in the playoffs. And he'll be available to call up if someone gets hurt, but I think he'll keep playing games. The other guys, the vets in particular, they might just stay with the big club.
So Sam Gagner had 9 points in 15 games for Bakersfield, and Adam Erne had 12 points in 35 games and was minus 12. Didn't exactly cover himself in glory down there. Jack Campbell has a 919 save percentage now in 32 games in Bakersfield. He's been outstanding since the first couple games. And I thought they might want to play him too. Although tomorrow night's a weird game. Although Colorado's unlikely to dress its best players either.
They're in the same boat.
Yeah, so no one's going to
dress. Game's going to suck.
It's truly is going to. Yeah,
so I thought prediction.
Just get Jack Campbell back in the NHL, get that over with. Have a, you know, all those awkward hellos and welcome back, Jack's over with. So if he is called up in the playoffs and if they do need him, which they may well, he's just that much more acclimated. Right. So I think that would have been a really smart move to make, although resting one of the key forwards, you know.
There's pros and cons for every option.
They can sit Hyman, they can sit Draisaitl, and they can sit McDavid, right? Those three guys. And Kane, they can sit four?
Four forwards.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure they'll sit the Bouchard-Ekholm pair. Tomorrow.
Yeah. Nuge doesn't play a particularly rough... And here I am, knock on wood. But he's not generally in the thick of battle, so to speak.
A ton of minutes.
He does. So yeah.
But anyway. He would be fourth on my list. And if Kane is ready to go and you want to get him one game back in there, then pull out the top four, the first power play unit.
I think you just think
of Colorado, you're not going to get any power plays anyway, right? Why dress
Kane's,
power play?
Yeah, if Kane's hurting, just let him rest, get him ready.
Yeah.
That's the key. And Nuge can cruise through a game as well as anyone else. Yeah. Kane's less likely to cruise through a game because of Kane. Yeah. Kane, because he's Kane. All right, Bruce. I think we have said all that needs to be said about that game. I did feel bad in
our life now, David.
I did feel bad for the Arizona fans when they panned the crowd and they showed some of the fans in all their gear.
Yeah.
I mean, even though I'm still sour that the Winnipeg Jets went there and abandoned Winnipeg for Arizona in the 1990s, I have a long memory about stuff like that. So, yeah. So it's nonetheless, they had been in that city a long time and there was lots of hardcore fans down there. So that's a tough moment for them for sure.
I don't know how many is lots, but there's the ones that who are hardcore, when they lose their team, it's brutal. Yeah. I just heard recently, my hometown, St. John's, Newfoundland, they lost the Newfoundland Growlers of the ECHL. They just ceased operations with six games to go in the season. And Terry Ryan, a fellow Newfoundlander who's a regular on Jason Greger's show, and he, in fact, as far as I can tell, lives there.
Yeah.
And phones it in. And he gave a very eloquent and frankly moving account of the pain and suffering that people were going through there. And it's one of those things, it's travel where they were paying the travel expenses of the visiting teams to come up and see them. And it just, the fans were supporting the team, but, just the math didn't work. Kind of like what happened with the Pacific Coast League when the Trappers and the Calgary and Vancouver all had teams, and American teams would come up for these 12-day road trips and play three series. But when the Vancouver and Calgary melted away, Edmonton was doomed. It didn't matter that we had really strong attendance and all that stuff. It just didn't make financial, fiscal sense anymore. And really, with Arizona and their 4,600-seat Mullet Arena, you can see it didn't make a lot of fiscal sense there, especially when the owner gets $1 billion to sell the team somewhere else. Yeah. Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
I'm just hoping we get a professional women's hockey team here in Edmonton. I think that would be fantastic. And, I'm not one, there's a lot of criticism there's a lot, there's some bad feeling about women's sports right now because of, like, well, some people say, like, well, the woman should be paid as the same as the man and stuff like that. And I just think, oh, come on, like, they should be paid how much based on their league is making is how I feel they should be paid. But so mm-hmm. set all that stuff aside, though, like that stupid argument about pay equity. It would be fantastic to have a women's hockey team, professional women's hockey team here in Edmonton. And I think it could make somebody a lot of money. And I think it would be well attended. Lots of people would go to the games. There'd be huge excitement about it. Look at how well attended the Oil Kings games are. So could we have three big teams in the city and still have lots of people going? Well, I don't go to the Oil Kings games, and we watch the Oilers games on TV to do video review, generally speaking, but I would love to go to a professional women's hockey league game. And so I think it's a 6-team league, but I can't see why you wouldn't have like a 6-team league startup in the West with Edmonton, Winnipeg, Calgary, Vancouver, Saskatoon, Oakland, not Oakland, Bruce. Oakland has gone downhill. They just can't even keep
the original expansion that took the NHL from 6 to 12. And
yeah, well, some fun with it. Closing in Oakland.
Here's a good comparison, though, or not good. Women's basketball, which just got a tremendous boost from the women's college tournament, March Madness. Caitlin Clark. She was just drafted first overall in the WNBA after the women's final drew the most TV audience of any basketball game, male or female, in the last 5 years. So, yeah. I mean, this is a burgeoning sport, maybe. She's going to make $76,000 next year as her first year as a rookie, whereas Victor Wembanyama of the San Antonio Spurs made as a rookie $12.1 million.
Yeah,
so like 200 times as much, basically.
And such is life. You know, she's going to make more than that in endorsements. Yeah. She's going to probably make more than Victor Wembanyama when it's all told in endorsements, Bruce. Maybe. I suspect she will. Yeah. And you know what? But 5 years from now, if Caitlin Clark and the other players can do a good job of raising excitement around that game, maybe they'll have their first $1 million contract in the next 5 years. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe the NBA will have their first $100 million contract by then, the way they're going.
It's crazy how much these guys make, but it's, hey, that's what they make. And they make it because that's the money that's generated. That's the revenue that's generated. So I don't have an issue with it. It'd be, you know, the NHL players might have an issue with it because they used to be on par in terms of salary with the NBA, but one league has taken off in popularity and there's fewer players. There's fewer star players in the NBA. Like there's
12 on a team,
just 12 players on a team and just six and five starters, right, who get the lion's share of playing time. Yep. But yeah, even guys on the bench make a lot of money. Anyway, we're getting off track here. Bruce, let's leave it there. Thanks for talking tonight. We'll be back at it tomorrow night.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this will be another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.